Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Christopher Jones Cruz, Brian Lynn, Mario Ritter, and Anne Ball. Later, John Russell will bring us this week's education report. But first, here is Christopher Jones Cruz.
American presidential candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton spent Monday night criticizing each other during their first debate. Trump and Clinton each spoke about their plans to strengthen economic growth and what role the United States should have in the world. The two disagreed with each other for almost all of the 90-minute-long debate. They often spoke up while the other was speaking. Trump, a businessman, is the presidential candidate of the Republican Party. Clinton, the former Secretary of State, is the Democratic Party's candidate. Libertarian Party candidate Gary Johnson and the Green Party candidate Jill Stein were not invited to the debate in Hempstead, New York. The event began with Clinton and Trump shaking hands. But it did not take long for the two candidates to start attacking each other. Trump questioned many of Clinton's answers. He repeated his belief that she is not healthy enough to serve as president.
I've been all over the place. You decided to stay home, and that's okay.
I think Donald just criticized me for preparing for this debate. And yes, I did. And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president.
Trump also said Clinton's policies have caused many problems, including the threat from ISIS.
She's telling us how to fight ISIS? Just go to her website. She tells you how to fight ISIS on her website.
Well, at least I have a plan to fight ISIS.
No, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
Clinton said Trump's economic plans would help only wealthy people. She said Trump does not want to release his tax records because they could show the businessman is not as rich as he claims he is. That led Trump to raise a question about the private email server she used while serving as America's top diplomat.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes. When she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted.
And I have no reason to believe that he's ever going to release his tax returns because there's something he's hiding.
Clinton said she had gained experience during her time as Secretary of State by traveling to 112 countries and negotiating peace deals and ceasefires. Trump said she may have experience, but called it bad experience. He sharply criticized the nuclear deal the United States and other powers reached with Iran to limit that country's nuclear program. Clinton said it was an example of effective diplomacy that stopped Iran from building nuclear weapons. Trump criticized the Obama administration's decision to withdraw nearly all U.S. troops from Iraq. He said at least 10,000 should have stayed there. He said that would have prevented the creation of the Islamic State. Clinton noted that the Iraqi government failed to offer legal protection to the U.S. forces if they stayed. She said that was one of the reasons the troops did not remain in Iraq. Mark Cuban, a billionaire businessman who supports Clinton, said he was happy with her debate performance.
She gave depth to her answer. She didn't hesitate. He was a counterpuncher, and like a lot of counterpunchers, when you throw your jab and it misses, you get frustrated and you press.
David Plouffe worked on President Barack Obama's two successful presidential campaigns.
I think he, as the debate went on, had a hard time retaining focus. I mean, Trump had some moments where it's hard to keep track of what he was really talking about.
Former New York City Mayor Rudolph Giuliani said Trump showed he is better prepared than Clinton to help the American economy.
She's a total phony. She was a failed Secretary of State, and what she demonstrated tonight is an incredible ignorance of the economy. How are you going to keep jobs in this country if you tax businesses more? Why would a business want to pay more taxes?
Hans Noel is an assistant professor of government at Georgetown University. He told VOA, I think that what we saw was very, very much the Trump that we've been seeing up until now, and the Clinton that we've been seeing up until now. And so probably most voters are going to have the same material that they had before. Noel said he did not think the first debate would cause many Americans to change their opinion about which candidate to support. He noted that people who watched the debate are likely to believe the candidate they have already decided to support. Most people have already made up their mind. So when Trump says something and someone challenges him on the facts, and he says, no, no, I'm still right, the people who are inclined to like Trump are going to continue to think that way, he said. They're going to believe that. And the same when Clinton says something, and some people challenge her on that or push back, and then they're going to say, I'm going to believe her, because they already did. Carrie Covington teaches political science classes at the University of Iowa. He said that Trump was very forceful, very assertive. He said Clinton appeared more calm and in control. He told VOA, Hillary Clinton demonstrated commands of policy questions. Donald Trump focused in on a small number of issues that he wanted to talk about, but wasn't as adept at speaking broadly to the range of topics that were asked about. Covington said presidents must be prepared for any issues that affect the country. He thought Clinton did a better job during the debate of dealing with many issues. Trump's goal has to be to overtake Clinton. That's a much more difficult task. That means persuading people who are either on the sidelines or are leaning towards Clinton to come over to his side, he said. I don't think he did much to help himself on that goal, but it's a more demanding goal than the one that Hillary Clinton faced. Hillary Clinton needed to reassure voters who don't want to vote for Trump that she's acceptable. She's already got the lead. She was able to give that impression. The candidates will meet in two more debates before the presidential election on November 8th. The next debate will be October 9th. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte says he is at a point of no return in relations with the United States and will seek closer ties with Russia and China. Speaking to reporters Monday, Duterte said he is not ready to break ties completely with the U.S. But he said he will open up the other side of the ideological barrier. Duterte said he will soon travel to Beijing for talks with President Xi Jinping on forming closer ties. The Philippines has recently been at odds with China over competing claims in the South China Sea. In July, an international court ruled in favor of Manila in a case challenging China's historical claims to large areas of the sea. China has rejected the ruling. Duterte said he has already spoken with Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, whom he plans to meet in Moscow. "I would need your help in everything, trade, commerce, and I will open up," he said, he told Medvedev. He announced that both Chinese and Russian companies would be able to lease land in the Philippines for up to 120 years. The comments come at a time of strained relations between the United States and the Philippines. The two countries have a long history of strong economic and defense ties. Recently, U.S. officials criticized the Philippine leader's bloody crackdown on illegal drugs. Police and other groups in the Philippines have so far killed more than 3,000 people reportedly involved in the drug trade. The Americans' criticism drew strong condemnation from Duterte. He repeatedly has said he is looking to distance the Philippines from the United States. Last month, U.S. officials canceled a meeting between Duterte and President Barack Obama after Duterte called Obama a son of a whore. Duterte later expressed regret for the comment. He said he was warning U.S. officials not to speak out about the drug crackdown. On Monday, Duterte also expressed concerns about a defense treaty signed by the two countries in 1951. He said the agreement does not guarantee that the U.S. would come to Manila's defense if the Philippines was attacked. He said this is because the U.S. president must first get the approval of Congress. Other countries and the United Nations have also criticized the Philippine government's drug war. The president has reportedly permitted death squads to kill accused drug offenders. The European Parliament recently issued a statement calling on Duterte's government to put an end to the current wave of extrajudicial executions and killings. It also expressed concern about the high number of people killed during police operations. Duterte singled out the European Union criticism during a speech last week in Manila. "Why would you insult me?" he asked. He also used a vulgar term to refer to the EU and displayed an obscene finger sign directed at the organization. I'm Brian Lynn.
China has established a clearing center for its money in the United States. The Bank of China's office in New York City is the first U.S. clearing center for the renminbi, or RMB. Chinese officials made the announcement last week. Premier Li Keqiang spoke at a dinner with the Economic Club of New York. He invited other banks to work with buyers and sellers of the RMB. "We also welcome banks in New York that meet the requirements to become a clearing bank for renminbi," Li said. The South China Morning Post reported his comments. Some people see China's move as an attempt to show that the RMB, also known as the yuan, is competitive with the U.S. dollar as a major currency. They say there is no reason for China to have U.S. banks serving as clearing centers for its money. Currently, there are clearing banks in a number of financial centers, including Hong Kong, London, Singapore, and Toronto. On October 1st, the RMB is to become the fifth currency in the International Monetary Fund's group of special drawing rights. The four others are the U.S. dollar, the British pound, the Japanese yen, and the euro. Christopher Balding teaches at Peking University. He says China is buying up available RMB on international markets in an effort to increase its value. He told VOA that the value of Chinese money would drop sharply if it were freely traded. China's recent policy has been to keep the money stable, to avoid sharp increases or decreases in value against other currencies. The exchange rate is currently between 6 and 7 RMB to the dollar. For many years, China has sought to make its money one of the important currencies of international trade. Cornell University professor Eswar Prasad says this presents Chinese officials with difficult choices. He said China's government faces a conundrum that other reserve currency economies have faced in the past: how to promote the currency's role in global finance without losing control over the currency's value. Prasad said China's actions suggest that a stable currency is more important than the RMB's role in international finance. Some experts say Chinese efforts to control its currency are not meant to make the country's exports less costly and therefore more competitive. Scott Kennedy is deputy director of the Freeman Chair in China Studies at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He says a stable exchange rate has been most important to China in recent months. China is most interested in maintaining basic stability of its currency and limiting volatility, he said. Kennedy added, "The recent modest depreciation is not geared to support exports." I'm Mario Ritter.
A New York-based human rights group has called on Pakistani officials to reform the country's police force. Human Rights Watch said Pakistan's police system dates back to British colonial rule. It said the system is filled with disgruntled and corrupt officers who abuse suspects without facing punishment for their actions. Human Rights Watch said it documented police abuses in 3 of Pakistan's 4 provinces. The abuses include torture, arrest, and detention of suspects without a court order, extrajudicial killings, and other abuse of detainees. The arrests and detentions sometimes resulted in the deaths of suspects, the group reported on Monday. The report said that police forces in Punjab, Balochistan, and Sindh faced improper pressure from politicians and local community leaders. For years, governments failed to carry out reforms or hold police responsible for abuse, it noted. Human Rights Watch said families of victims are failing to report police abuse because of fear of being threatened or falsely accused in other cases. Those from groups like refugees, the poor, religious minorities, and the landless are at particular risk of violent police abuse, said the 102-page report. The report is based on statements by police officers, victims of police abuses, their families, experts, activists, and witnesses to police abuses. Human Rights Watch called on Pakistan to improve working conditions and job-related awards for police officers. It said the police force is under-resourced and under-equipped, noting officers are not trained in methods of professional investigation and forensic studies. It said this lack of training leads to officers unlawfully forcing suspects to provide information or admit guilt. Human rights activists and local media often comment on and criticize suspected police abuses. Custodial torture remained one of the gravest and most pressing human rights issues in Pakistan, noted the Independent Human Rights Commission of Pakistan in a report. Critics say that Pakistani politicians use the police to suppress opponents in an effort to stay in power. They say this has effectively kept governments from enacting reforms and punishing abusive police officers. I'm Anne Ball.
Young people in the United States do not have a strong understanding of the world and their place in it. 2 U.S.-based groups, the Council on Foreign Relations and the National Geographic Society, commissioned an online survey earlier this year. They wanted to know what young people educated in American colleges knew about geography, U.S. foreign policy, recent international events, and economics. In general, the results were not very good. The survey was given to over 1,200 Americans between the ages of 18 and 26 years. All of them currently attend, or formerly attended, a 2 or 4 year college or university. The average test score out of 75 total possible answers was 55%. The study identifies a few important questions that American students did not know about their own country. For example, less than 30% knew that a treaty requires the United States to protect Japan if it is attacked. Only 30% knew that the only part of the U.S. government that can declare war is Congress. The online survey produced findings that are similar to the findings of other recent studies. Part of the problem, say the organizers of the survey, is the Internet. They say it is becoming harder to get good information about what is happening in the world today. Susan Goldberg is with the National Geographic Society. She says people never have to see anything that differs from their understanding of the world. Many get their news from a news feed. 43% of those questioned said they read about national and international news on Facebook. Another problem is that classes do not require students to learn about international issues. That is the opinion of Richard Haass of the Council on Foreign Relations. The problem is schools do not require that students take these courses to graduate, he said. There is a fundamental difference between offering a course and requiring it. If such information is not required, Haass said, then the United States could have leaders like Gary Johnson. Johnson is the presidential candidate of the Libertarian Party. He did not know about the Syrian city of Aleppo when a reporter asked him about it. The survey results were not all bad. The young people who were questioned demonstrated a good understanding of climate change and renewable energy. Even if the young people failed to understand many of the questions, the majority of them said that international issues were becoming more important to them. Only 2% said that knowledge of foreign or non-U.S. cultures was not important. 1% said knowledge of world events was not important. Haass says these findings suggest the need to find ways to get good information to students, both in school and online. To help, the Council on Foreign Relations is creating a new program called CFR Campus, designed to help build knowledge about global issues. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.